The theme of our camp is freedom. And we've heard a lot about freedom, but freedom is meaningless unless we can experience it. By the way, I'll be speaking in English, not Mandarin today. So I hope you can understand, no problems with English. So today, I'd like to emphasize on the question of what freedom is and how we may experience it. So that freedom doesn't become just an idea, a word, but a reality in our lives. Is freedom a reality in your life? Think about it for a moment. I'm not talking about freedom that you can walk around, that you can eat what you want to eat, and so on. Is a person free? Let us look at it this way. If a person were sitting in prison, if you were in prison, locked up in jail, let's say because you're a Christian. I know many people in China who have been in prison for more than 20 years. Just before coming to Hong Kong, I had fellowship with three dear people, two brothers and a sister, all of whom had spent a long time in prison, in hard labor camps in prison. Two of them over 20 years. The sister had been in prison for around 15 years. Are you free if you are in prison? It says, where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. Is the Spirit of the Lord in prison? If He is, then even in prison you must be free. How can you be free when you're in prison? You want a bar of chocolate, you can't get chocolate. If you can get food, it's good enough. One of the brothers shared how they were nearly starved during the famine in China, eating tree barks, grass roots in their hunger. How can you be free if you're in prison? Wherever the Spirit of the Lord is, you can't keep the Spirit of the Lord out of prison. But if the Spirit of the Lord is in prison with you, then you are free. That is, there is the inner freedom. So the freedom that we are speaking of is not some political freedom, some external freedom, but the freedom that is within, the reality of an inner freedom that nothing can take away, nothing can affect. Have you experienced this kind of freedom? Do you know the reality and power of this? When I talk to these dear ones who have been in labor camps, there is not a sign of bitterness. There is not a sign of resentment. They took away 20 years of the best years of my life. One of them was taken away to prison 3 days after he got married. And he didn't come out again for over 20 years. His marriage was taken apart, you can see. And what was his crime? Because he was a Christian. And they tried to make him give up his faith in prison. You deny Christ and we let you go right away. You can go back to your wife. You can go and enjoy your married life. Just deny the Lord. He said the Constitution, according to what you have written, is to guarantee freedom of religion. Why do you want me to deny what you guarantee in your Constitution? You say Constitution is one thing, you are something else. Everybody knows by now that the Constitution is something on paper. When it comes to reality, it's a different story. He refused to deny his faith because he couldn't, because he knew the Lord is real, but also because he pointed out to them again and again, the Constitution says that I may believe. You are forcing me to do something contrary even to the Constitution. That made no impression. They kept him 21 years. Should he not have been very bitter? Should he not come out saying these people are the worst liars in the world, and they have messed up my life. They have taken away best years of my life. No, you don't find a shred of bitterness. Freedom. The well-known saying in English is that four walls do not a prison make. You can't put a person between four walls and think that you have put him in prison. Not, that is, if he has freedom within. These three that I was talking to just before coming over to Australia have one thing in common: freedom. There is a peace, there is a joy, as you talk about. They didn't say, well, we are old now, they're in their 60s now, and they've had their lives ruined by the communists. No, there is nothing could be ruined. The peace, the reality of God, and the experience of freedom could not be taken away. And since it couldn't be taken away, their joy, their peace could not be taken away. Sure, they didn't have the liberty to run around, to drive a car, to eat what they like to eat. These kind of things they didn't have in prison, of course. They went through lots of hardships, hard work day by day. But to them, there's no loss. They enjoyed the closeness of God in a way that most of those people, most of the people who have never been in labor camp have never experienced. God gave them more than they ever lost. They enjoyed the freedom of a walk with God. Which would you rather prefer? To be able to run around, do what you like, but never really enjoy true freedom? Never really enjoy the reality of God? So at the end of 20 years of running around, what have you got? You got nothing at the end. Some of the best years of my life were the years I spent in China living under poverty. I had nothing, extremely poor, often getting up in the morning not knowing what I was going to have, never mind for breakfast. I didn't have any breakfast, but for the rest of the day. To this day, I hardly have the habit of taking breakfast. But every time I look back, do I think I had no freedom because I had no money, I was so poor, I was under the communists, I couldn't even get a job, I couldn't sell newspapers without government approval. No, I find that those years are ever so precious in my memory, because those were the years I experienced the Lord. And I then came out of China, I went to Switzerland. And Switzerland is one of the richest countries in the world, one of the most beautiful countries in the world. The scenery is so unbelievably fantastic. The Alps, the lakes, the forests, the mountains. Have you been to Switzerland? That's some place to see. Oh, beautiful, beautiful country. And the people are so well-to-do. And they are such nice people. They're so polite, so kind. I mean, they have such a good life. They don't have to be nasty. When you go into the shop, they chat with you. They talk so nicely to you. They're not too busy, that is. Everything is nice, from the scenery to the people to the standard of living, which is so high. And therefore, you must find that people must be a very happy, free people. Freedom, of course, is the hallmark of Switzerland. It is known as the most representative democracy in the world. It is a model for every democracy, Switzerland. Every citizen is a soldier, because every citizen is there to defend his freedom. Even Singapore, those of you from Singapore will know that they modeled their army on the Swiss army. And now, of course, also on the Israeli army. Switzerland, a country of freedom. It is governed by the people. It is run by the people. The army is the people's army, because every citizen in Switzerland must join the army. They keep their guns at home. They are so free. I was shocked when I first went there and stayed in someone's home. I opened the wardrobe and, wow, helmets, rifles. I thought, wow, if this were in China, this would be an uprising. Bayonets, everything in there. They keep their weapons at home. Anyone who tries to rob a Swiss home might be in great danger. I mean, you are running into soldiers everywhere. Every Swiss citizen has got military training. And they keep their weapons at home, and their ammunition too. In some countries, they let you take your rifle home, but not the ammunition. so that in case of war, you can go and collect your ammunition, but without that, you've only got a gun which you can't use. But do they have robbery? Do they have high crime rate in Switzerland? Not at all. Not at all. Ideal democracy. And therefore, I thought, this must be the happiest people in the world. So I talked to them. I said, you must be wonderfully happy. You have such a high income. You have a beautiful country. You have wonderful homes. You have complete political, social freedom, whatever. You must be like, oh, we're not really happy inside. We try to be, but we're not really. We do our best to be happy, but not too successful. So what do you like? Oh, well, certain emptiness inside, something not really free inside. Can't explain it, really. Some kind of a hole in the heart, you know. Oh, I said, really? I thought you must be the happiest people. I said, not really. I thought maybe this person is exception. Ask the next one. The same answer, you ask the next one, the same answer. Everybody finds something missing inside. A certain emptiness within. That is the common thing in Switzerland. So today, I'm concerned about this inner freedom. The inner freedom that these people in China that I talked about had experienced. Without this, you can live in the richest country in the world, and Australia is not doing too badly. It is one of the well-to-do countries, and for those of us from Canada, we are in the so-called G7, one of the seven richest countries in the world. So what does it prove? It doesn't prove anything. As far as freedom goes, that is the inner freedom. You have everything outside, but you don't have that which you need inside. How do we have that inner freedom? When you have that, as I said, people can take you and put you in prison. They can lock you up. Your physical and external conditions can be terrible. It doesn't matter. Freedom is within. What if you are sick? What if you are blind? Surely that's terrible. That's a tragedy. That's a disaster. What about if you got crippled? If you got become a paraplegic? You can't even move. What freedom can you talk about? Many of you have read of the book by Joni, isn't it? She was a very athletic person. One day in a mishap, diving from the diving board, isn't it? She broke her neck, paralyzed from the neck down. She was very young, good-looking, healthy, and now she was crippled. Can you imagine if you were in her position? How would you feel? That suddenly you can't move anymore. Suddenly you can't do any of the things you want to do. You become a paraplegic. Can you imagine that? All freedom of movement is gone. And when you cannot move, what freedom can you talk about? That's worse than being in a prison. In a prison, you can still walk around. You still got your mobility. You still have your health. But once you're paraplegic, once you're paralyzed, you become totally immobile. You can't even lift your hand to your mouth. You're just crippled. You depend on other people. But you have seen her books. The freedom within is something that all of us who can move around do not necessarily enjoy. That is the true freedom. Now, when we turn to the Bible, we find that the whole Bible is about freedom. Old Testament and New Testament, it's all about freedom. The Bible is a book about freedom. It is a handbook on freedom. Anyone who is not free doesn't know what the Bible is about. The Bible is not a book that tells you, you must not do this, you must not do that, and you end up, you can't do anything. Many Christians simply have the reputation of being so legalistic, so bound by regulations, that they give people the impression that the Christian life is all about laws, about restrictions, about what you may not do. The Bible isn't about that at all. The whole Bible is about freedom. Right back into the Old Testament, the first five books of the Bible called the Pentateuch. What was it all about? It was about God setting a people free, taking them out of Egypt, people who were slaves, people who were under bondage for over 400 years, who in the later generations knew nothing except that their father was a slave, their father's father was a slave, and as far back as they could ever remember, they were all slaves. 400 years of slavery. And God took this bunch of slaves and took them out of Egypt. And you know the exciting story. Some of you may have seen the film, Ten Commandments. You have seen the dramatic presentation of it. What an exciting thing. Do you remember? Have some of you seen that picture? The Ten Commandments? And how they passed through the sea, the water standing up like walls on both sides? How dramatic. God took this people and set them free. "Let my people go" became a famous slogan. And Moses said to Pharaoh, "Let my people go," when God speaking through him. "Set my people free that they may serve me." That is what the Bible is about. Freedom. God chose slaves. Why didn't he choose a free people? He chose slaves to make them his people so that they could experience true freedom. But as we shall see, there were great problems that had to be overcome. In the New Testament too, of course, the same thing. The whole New Testament is about freedom. The Lord Jesus said, "You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free," in John chapter 8, verses 32-36. What is truth? Pilate asked this question. The Roman governor asked Jesus the question. What is truth? He thought he was asking a philosophical question. The truth is something that sets you free. That's the Lord Jesus' answer. If it doesn't set you free, it isn't the truth. How do I know something is true? Just see if it sets you free. Then you'll know. If you can experience it, then you know that this truth is not just a freeing idea, but something that you can experience in the power of its reality. When you look at Christians who are not free, you realize that they don't really know the truth. That is the whole problem. Are you free? I come back to this question and will come back again throughout this message. Are you free? Or are you governed by nameless what? Problems within. Problems that you hardly even know how to describe. Something missing, something empty, something you want and you cannot have. You want this and you want that. You are the slave to all kinds of desires, pulling you now one way, pulling you in the other direction. You don't know which way you are going. All the time longing for something and yet not knowing exactly what you're longing for. And then you thought you found it, and then you find you got it, and then you still are longing for something. Always something missing. And some people spend all their lives looking for this and looking for that. First, looking for good results in your exams. You got your exam results, not too bad. You get a degree, not too bad. And you thought, once I get a degree, I'll be happy. No, you got a degree and you're not happy. Okay, after a degree, what you need a job. So you go job hunting. And then so hard to find a job. I knew one poor guy who in Canada who was looking for a job for 2 years. He got a degree in chemical engineering. He thought, okay, with a degree, I get a job, right? Nobody wants him. So he thought, this is ridiculous. So he starts saying, okay, I know what. I'm going to broaden my base. So he does what? He does an MBA, Master of Business Administration. So now he is an engineer and Master of Business Administration. Now surely everybody wants him. And nobody wants him. He can't find a job. 2 years in Canada. He told me he wrote over 100 letters of application. And he was totally frustrated after 2 years. Nobody even wants to look at him. BSc, MBA. Well, that doesn't look too bad behind your name. And nobody wants you. Finally, he left Canada in frustration. And look, went job hunting in the United States. Eventually, somebody decided kindly to employ him before he cracked up completely. And surely then, you think that now if I go on from master's to PhD, then I will be doing not too badly. The telephone company in Montreal put out an application, minimum qualification for the applicant, PhD. Ah, you think that's it. I got it. So you walk in there. Here I am, the PhD you're looking for. I look at you. No. You know how many people applied for one PhD job? Over 100 PhDs for one job. The other over 100, I think it was 110, I don't quite remember how many, somewhere around there. The over 109 were left still looking around for. And you know, we have in Montreal people with PhD in physics who are cooking in the Chinese restaurant. Because they can't find any job in the field of physics. There are too many physicists, as simple as that. You think, I spent all my years study, research. I got a PhD at the end. I got this thing on the wall. Look here, look at this beautiful certificate. It's genuine. It's real. It's honest. I am PhD. Look. They say, fine, there is the kitchen. Go there and cook. I didn't study cooking. But either you take the job or you starve. That's how it is. That's the way. Or you go on social welfare, whichever you prefer. Always something missing. Life doesn't seem to fit exactly what we had hoped for. So, there we go. Then you go on. What can I go on to? If I could get more money, I'd buy myself a nice house. Okay, so you got your house. Now you're satisfied? No, the house is not bad, but I like it a little bit. You want another one? You want to add extension? What do you want, actually? Or maybe I'll settle for a car, you see. Okay, so you get a car. No, cars are not bad. What do you like? Which model? Which is nice? So you look at the neighbor. Oh, that one looks better than me. I get another. All right, we have 2 cars, 3 cars, 4 cars. How many cars can you drive anyway? And they're still not satisfied. Still not satisfied. We have houses in Canada with 3 garages built in. I wonder, how does a guy build drive 3 cars? Most of the house is all garage, you know. It's really something. You build a house to house the car. And you sit on top of the thing, and below are all garages, see? What can we do in this world? What finally satisfies you in the emptiness within? We don't know what we are finally looking for. And yet those people that I talked about in China, they had nothing. Nothing whatever. Not even the clothes that they were wearing could be claimed as their own. Prison clothes belongs to the government, not their own. And yet there is freedom, peace, joy. Some of the happiest, freest people I have seen, the poorest people in the world. I know some very rich people, I can tell you. Among my friends, there are some multi-millionaires. Oh, are they rich? And they are very unhappy. I talked to the wife of one recently. And she was saying, oh, if only we didn't have all this countless property, which is sinking us down with, they can't even enjoy a little bit of life together in the married life. Because the husband is so busy looking after the countless properties and the wife is so busy, they haven't got time for anything. They have no time but to run their properties. Oh yeah, they may be worth over $100 million. I don't know how much they're worth. Millions and millions and countless properties all over the world, as a matter of fact, in Hong Kong, elsewhere. But how unhappy. If you meet them, you'll know. Some of the most unhappy people in the world. Does money buy you freedom? No way. If money could buy freedom, these would be the happiest people, but they are not. The whole mind is taken up, preoccupied from morning to night. How to deal with this property? How to deal with that? This one must be sold. This one must be bought. This must be rented. Oh, dear me. What freedom have you got left? Everything else is running your life. You experience freedom? And to what extent? Jesus said, I am the way, the life, and the truth. What is truth? Remember. Truth is what sets you free. You shall know the truth. The truth shall set you free. Do you know the truth? Is Christianity the truth? Not unless it sets you free. Let's be very plain about this. anything that brings you into bondage is not the truth as far as scripture is concerned. Jesus is the truth because he sets us free. Have you experienced him? Easter day, we talk about the resurrection. What is resurrection? Resurrection is freedom. From what? From the thing that binds most powerfully, namely death. How can we be free in the face of death? How can? Where would there be possibly freedom? Because death affects us not at the end of our life, but here and now. Death already casts its shadow by the fear of it. Do you know that the whole human life is governed by one thing? The reality of death. How so? Think about it for a moment. We already know the power of death. You just open the newspaper. You read about what? Robbery. Person holds a gun at you and says, money over, your watch, your diamond ring, whatever. He is using the fear of death. If you are not afraid to be shot dead, how should you worry? He knows that you are afraid of death. So he has got complete control over you. He points a gun at you and he has control over you. He can do whatever he wants with you. He wants your money, he gets your money. Whatever he wants. Fear of death is what controls us. The terrorists do this on a large scale, of course. I put a bomb in the plane. Give me $2 million, $5 million ransom, or I blow this plane out of the sky. The fear of death, the fear of other people's death, the fear of our death, we hold people in ransom, hold them to ransom by the fear of death. Those are very obvious cases, but the whole of life is governed by fear of death. Why do we work at all? Why? Because we need to earn money. Who needs money? Why do you need money? Well, because I need food. Aha. Why do you need food? Because if I don't eat, I die. So why are you afraid to die? Don't eat. No problem. Don't be foolish. I don't want to die. Exactly. You eat. We need food. We must have jobs. We must work. We must have income. The whole reason is that death, the fear of death, controls us. If we were not afraid to die, we wouldn't be afraid not to eat. Have you lived in hunger before? Most people here don't even know what hunger is. Have you ever felt the stabs of hunger in your stomach like a knife? I have. And you have no fear? You are brave until you feel it. The constant stabbing of hunger in the stomach. And you know that your life is now at stake. Most people live in a stage where they know neither freedom nor lack of freedom. That's the strange thing. We live in a twilight zone, which is really the worst. You are neither free from in a complete sense, nor completely unfree, so that you don't know where you are. That's the tragedy. You have never experienced the sharp pains of hunger. That's why you don't know what it is to be fully satisfied either. That is the thing. Because man is governed by the need to survive, he needs food before he works. Why do you study so hard? So you can earn more. Because you want not just to have enough food to get by, but be able to also enjoy a bit more beside that. With food then, there comes a whole industry. Food manufacturers, the processing, agriculture, fisheries, and goes on and on. All these things have to do with food. Food in order to be able to live and not die. And then it goes on. What is medicine all about? If one wouldn't fearful of death, who needs medical treatment? If you're going to die, you die. So what? Why do you need to see a doctor? What is all the medicine for? Why worry about pain? Does not pain frighten us with disease, with the possibility of death, the anxiety that threatens us all the time? And with that comes research. Who needs to worry about the research about cancer, about AIDS, and all this ongoing research? Because all these diseases threaten us with death, and the fear of death overshadows us all the time. How can we be free? And so a vast amount of money is poured into research, poured into finding a way to survive death, to face death, to overcome death. Everything you look at, what is housing to do? Well, if you slept outside every day and the weather gets cold, you might freeze to death. Housing is necessary to protect our lives, to protect our health, and to protect us from other people. It's all about surviving death. Everything is there to do with it. Why do we need transportation? Because that helps us to earn the money we need to survive. We need to travel around to the place of work and so on. It all is governed. The fear of death, the shadow of death casts its control over mankind long before he ever got to the graveyard. You see, that's why we read in Hebrews chapter 2, verses 14 and 15. What does it say there? That Jesus died to set us free from him who had the power of death and who kept us in bondage all our lives. How? Through the fear of death. A person who is no longer afraid of death begins to experience true freedom. Some people, they got a headache, they got a cold, they got a flu, they rush to the doctor as though the doctor can get rid of the flu for them with some magic bullet, some magic tablet. What's this anxiety? What's this phobia about? The fear of death ultimately is lurking behind all these behaviors. It's easy to talk about saying, oh, I'm not afraid of death. When I was a non-Christian, of course, as many of you know from my testimony, I wanted to become a military person, to study military science, to set China free with a force of arms, to build a new nation. I had grand ideas, grand visions. As I said before, I got beaten to the game by Mao Zedong, who had the advantage of being quite a lot older than me. So he got there ahead of me. If Mao Zedong hadn't got there first, I might have been doing the same thing. Because that exactly was my plan, to build an army and set China free. He had exactly the same idea. I thank God that he got there ahead of me now, otherwise I'll be fighting the wrong battle of liberation. Yeah, so because I was committed to a military life, I believed, as Mao Zedong truly said, power comes out of the barrel of a gun. There's no use talking. When you got an army behind you, then people listen. But otherwise, you just have talk and nobody bothers. You can have the grandest ideas, nobody cares. And so I disciplined myself and trained myself in that direction. And of course, among all these things, you have to learn not to fear death. And I believed that I had overcome within myself any fear of death. I even made it a point to go and really look at death and suffering in particular. I made myself go to the British Council and watch some films on operations. I didn't like the sight of blood, you see. And the notion of people cut open here. I thought to myself, this is nasty stuff. But I have to train myself. So I sat there to watch these films, strengthen myself. Come on, be a man, look at it. And all this red stuff going around, never mind, look at it. You got to toughen it. What fear? I mean, if you can't look at that, what do you talk about? Fear of death? Of course you fear death. Why is that so frightening to you? Pain and death, they're all related to one another, isn't it? So I sat there, grit my teeth and watch operation. Sometimes you want to turn away. This is looking terrible. But come on, we must learn to overcome. I've heard of medical students in the beginning, the first time they see an operation, they pass out. You're in the booth. You're supposed to be learning. What are you doing down there? So, I thought I had dealt with this. And I want to share with you a recent experience that happened since I was here last time. I already had this lump under the arm, in the armpit. It happened about 5 years ago. And one day I noticed under my arm there was this lump. And I thought, what is this? This doesn't look very good. I felt it. There's no pain. There's nothing there. I also knew enough about anatomy to know something about lymph glands and so forth. And I thought to myself, this doesn't look very good. I got this lump here. And then the question is, what are we going to do? I remembered that my father, too, had developed a lump on the back of his neck and was discovered in a routine examination, a routine physical checkup, where the doctor discovered this lump on his neck and said, "What is this?" He said, "What? What is what?" He said, "This lump." He said, "Do I have a lump?" I was not even aware of it. And then the doctor says, I got to look into this. He was feeling fine. My father was feeling fine. But he was not aware of the lump. Well, the doctor decided to have a biopsy done on it to test the thing. My father was dead within 2 months. 2 months from the discovery of the lump. 2 months, that is, from the biopsy. Now, I don't want to go into details of this, but it seemed to me as I read some of the report and the way the biopsy was done, that it sounded like that the procedure was not the way that it should properly be done, although it was said to have been done by a top surgeon. It sounded to me like that the procedure was not done in such a way that so as to prevent the cells within the lump leaking into the bloodstream. Cancer was all over him. Within 2 months, he was dead after the biopsy. I immediately thought about that when I had the lump in the armpit, and I thought, you say you're not afraid to die, right? Now look at the reality. It looks like the cancer might be staring you in the face. After all, your dad had it too, right? I thought, what shall I do? And I thought, here is the test I'm going to see. When God turns his searchlight into my heart, whether I'm really afraid to die or not. I just waited on the Lord. I took no action of my own. 1 year passed, 2 years passed, 3 years passed. And all that mainly happened was that the lump got bigger. So, actually, by the time I came 3 years ago to Australia, the lump had already grown much larger. I said nothing. Initially, I said nothing to my wife, Helen, either, because knowing that she is a nurse, she hears about a lump in the armpit, all the alarm bells are going to go off. And I thought, no, I'm not going to worry her. I won't say anything. But later on, as a couple of years passed and the lump was getting bigger, I thought, that's not very fair. At least she should know. So I mentioned to her, I said, I have a lump. And I thought she was going to really panic. And she looked at me and she said, wow, it's quite big. That's the only comment she made. But she knows me well enough that I just wait on the Lord for instructions. I'm not going to rush. Then I decided that I would ask some questions to my medical friends, since I have quite a few friends who are well-qualified specialists. I didn't want to say I have a lump, but I would say, what would you do in the case of somebody who has, you know, lump, under the armpit or somewhere like this? Well, of course, the usual statement is, well, we would do a biopsy, right? What else would you say? And I said, what about the procedure? How would you ensure that in the process of the biopsy, the cancerous cells might not somehow accidentally be allowed to get into the bloodstream? They said, well, there are strict procedures to try to avoid all this kind of thing. I said, yeah, I'm sure there are. A lot must have improved since the days my father had that operation 30 years ago. I'm sure they have learned a few lessons since that time. However, even so, I just want to say, Lord, what do you want to do? I am not going to be in any way panicky. I wanted to look in my heart to see, do you fear death or not? Now we are not talking theory. Now you got a lump, my friend. You got a tumor in your body. Now we are talking death, the reality of it, and you are looking at it. I look at my heart, and I notice sometimes there was a little discomfort. How much time do I have left? It kept getting bigger. It was beginning to get to the size of a small egg, and I thought, this is going to affect the movement, and I could feel the discomfort sometimes. It was pressing on something. I still waited 5 years. 5 years. I'm sure many of my medical friends will say, you foolish guy. You're really playing with death. Indeed. But my life is the Lord's. Do I panic? No. I wanted to be sure that I was fully free. Free from the fear of death. Where I could look at the situation in perfect calmness. Not to worry. What the Lord would have me do, I will do. When the Lord says, go, I will go. And have it done, dealt with. Last year, about this time, I suddenly felt pain. It became very, very painful. First a little bit pain, and then intensely painful. It was so painful I couldn't sleep at night. I thought, this is it. I left it too long. I've had it now. My days are over. Now it's time to say goodbye to everybody. It's finished. And it was getting red and extremely painful all there. And I thought, shall I go to see the physician? I know what he's going to do. He's going to rush me off to the hospital. Quick in there and operate. Cut the whole thing out. I said, no, no, no. Lord, I'm still waiting for instructions. Unless I'm deaf spiritually, I haven't heard any instructions from you yet to go and get it operated on. Romans 8:14. As many as are led by the Spirit of God, these are the children of God. What leads us? Under what are we controlled by? What determines our life? Our fears, our anxieties, or God? I said, Lord, I'm listening. This pain is getting hard to endure. But what do you want me to do? Rush to the hospital? I'm waiting for instructions. No word from the Lord. Not a word. I waited. No sound. The second night, the pain. Whoa, it was terrible. Couldn't sleep. So bad was the pain. Lord, I'm still listening. No instructions. Now you, who, if you have read my testimony, will know that I'm rather used to listening to instructions from the Lord. When He says something, I will do it. But since I belong to Him, I am not at liberty to do what I want to do. Of course, I am at liberty to do what I want to do, but I will then pay the price myself. I don't want to do what I want to do in my limited knowledge of things about life and reality. I want to know what He wants me to do. So I waited. No instruction. I thought, how many more days can I endure all this pain? And I'm sure by now my medical friends will say, this guy is completely crazy. He is a madman. You don't fear death. It doesn't mean you have to go and run into the arms of death. What's wrong with you? If I didn't know my God, then I am really crazy. But I know my God. I will wait for His instruction. Second day went by. Second night, I couldn't sleep with the pain. I thought, oh, dear me, Lord, have you got instruction for me yet? Am I free from the fear of death by now? I think by the grace of God, I could say, yes, I am. I now can say so. In the past, I just said to myself, I shall not fear death. Now I had faced 5 years of testing. 5 years is a long time. And now with this pain as the final level of test, I refused to panic. I just looked to the Lord. By the third day, the evening of the third day, I sat there quietly in the living room, and suddenly I felt something strange in the armpit. I felt that something was very wet. But what's going on? And then I touched there and it was, everything was wet. What had happened is that whatever was in the inside that lump or that tumor now began to discharge. And my t-shirt, everything was soaking in the armpit. And needless to say, there was also a very strange odor that I had not smelled before. I thought, ooh, what is this? So I went there and I took off my t-shirt. It was all full of